See this about Bo Nix? Since week four, says PFF, 16 touchdowns, one turnover worthy play. Might not even have been a turnover, just like, oh, it could have been. I need something to be afraid of. This is very unsettling, the Bills just ripping through the league again. Like, I don't know, want to be afraid of Bo Nix? Is that a stretch? Is that trying too hard to be afraid of Bo Nix?
I appreciate the effort.
Afraid.
I appreciate the effort, but I am not going to get there.
I don't want to call it afraid anyway. I want to call it, like, respectful.
It's okay. That's fine.
I can't even have Burrow. They can't win a game.
No.
4-7? Look how good they look, but they can't win a game. What do I do with that? I can't be afraid of that? What can I be afraid of? Eric Wood on the West Her Hotline.
What should Mike be afraid of,
Eric? What are we going to be afraid of?
I don't know, guys. I love the optimism. I love hopping on here and catching this type of optimism where
it is
no longer any fears throughout the NFL. I would say in the short term, maybe, having sound run defense against the San Francisco team that will likely stick with it over and over, at least, stick to the ground game and swing passes the running backs and whatnot. But no, I'm with you. There's a lot to be excited about after yesterday. That was big boy football, trading blows back and forth, get another 2-score win at home, put up 30 points for the fifth straight game. You put 30 on a Kansas City team that hasn't given up more than 28 points in 38 games. It was a fun one.
Yeah, no doubt. How what is there a key for you offensively, aside from the cheat code that is Josh Allen on 4th-and-2 going 26 yards and running over linebackers again? What was the thing that stood out to you? Because, like, they couldn't really run it very effectively. They scored 3 rushing touchdowns, funny enough, but they didn't have a very good day on the ground overall. How did they manage to do it and put 30 on that team, 31?
Yeah, to me, what stood out to me offensively was the execution in the passing game, and that's without Kincaid, and that's without Coleman, and that's with Amari Cooper playing with a cast on his hand, and you have another game where different players are stepping up, especially in the passing game. You have Curtis Samuel finally coming alive. Mm-hmm. Yesterday gets his first touchdown of the season. Mac Hollins had a couple nice plays again. Dawson Knox had a nice play down the field. Amari Cooper with 2 great catches in the first half. The one early on was big because it looked like the Bills were going to get off to a quick punt. It's 3rd-and-7, and he makes that one-handed catch with the hand that he has the brace on. And so, to me, this is an offense that, everyone was really excited about the start of the season with the everybody eats. We get off to a 3-0 start, and then it's mocked for a couple weeks. it's everybody eats. But nobody eats when you play somebody good, and nobody eats when you play press man-to-man defense. And now they're figured out, and then they rattle off 6 straight wins, 5 in a row over 30 points. And this is an offense that, to me, week after week, they can just beat you in different ways with different guys, and it's not forcing it to anybody at any time, other than maybe the fact that you have to commit to some type of ground game, even if it's not working, to be able to open some stuff up down the field. But this is a very pass-happy Bills offense right now, and that's okay. They still have an effective run game most weeks that they didn't get much yesterday. But to me, it's just the variety and the ways that they can beat you offensively. It just seems like it's an offense that's going to have lasting power throughout the season into the postseason.
Eric, taking a step back, just I'd love to hear your perspective on what yesterday felt like. Bulldog and I spent a lot of last week trying to figure out the importance of this game. Maybe we even talked about it last Monday. Like, what do I do with this? It's all about the playoffs. Sure, one seed, etc. But you had Nance and Romo. You had a lively crowd, to put it very mildly. As you sort of ramped up to this game and then experienced it, what do you have to say about sort of like what it felt like and what it meant?
Yeah, it felt like a big game with the build up, the amount of national media attention that this game was getting, the amount of national media requests that I got last week. I always know it's a big game coming up, or it's a postseason game or a critical game based upon the amount of requests that I get throughout the week as well. And so it just felt like a lot of build-up to this game. You had CBS bring their Desk crew as well yesterday. They're jumping through tables. Harry Douglas from ESPN Radio, my former college teammate with maybe one of the worst table jumping attempts of all time. But there was a lot of build up to this game, and then to me it lived up to it, to where you're watching two of the league's best go at it out there. And to me, and we talked about it last week, the season's obviously not over if you lose that one. Is it easier to beat a team if you lost to them once, and it's harder to beat a team twice? To me, you don't hold anything back in that game. Anything that works offensively or defensively, you use it as potentially something that you can scheme off of the next time, because you are going to give them something further to prepare for with what you did well against them in the previous matchup. And it's a psychological thing where you're proving to yourself over and over, even if it's not the playoffs, you're proving to yourself over and over for the fourth straight year in the regular season that you can beat these guys. And yes, they won the last two Super Bowls, and everyone was ready to crown them when they were 9-0. This is a team that you could beat consistently.
How about the 4th-and-2 play? The decision, the play itself. Eric, you've been in that booth for some very memorable moments. Nyheim Hines' touchdown kick returns in the first game back after Hamlin is probably, up near the top of emotional moments. But considering the opponent, now the Bills weren't losing at the time, of course, but it's 4th-and-2. You know who you're playing. And not only do you get the first down, it's one of these plays that sort of unfolded in a series. It's like, oh, he's got the first down. Oh, there's more. Oh, he's just going to score. It's just like boom, boom, boom. Just that moment in the booth calling that with Brownie.
Yeah, he broke out of the pocket, and I knew he wasn't going down. It just felt like one of those moments where he's going to take off and do the rest of this with his legs. Mac Hollins actually has his hands up when Josh is at about the 20-yard line, which at that point there's 3 to 4 defenders that can all make that play still. And Mac Hollins puts his hands up at the 20-yard line knowing that 17 is going to get in the end zone. But, as far as the decision goes, I don't know if this one is one that Sean maybe early in his career would have kicked the field goal, given them a 5-point advantage so that a field goal no longer ties you, forces them to go for a touchdown. I'm not sure. But to me, it just seems like over time, Sean's gotten more and more aggressive, and I'm sure some of it's just having confidence in Josh Allen to make correct decisions. He's growing in maturity. You got an offense that's, they execute at a high rate, so you feel comfortable leaving them on the field and taking more chances on fourth downs. But Sean said it afterwards. He wasn't letting Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes, if they go down swinging there, that's fine, but we're not going to kick the field goal and give you a shot to win it at the end with a touchdown. And I like that. I love the decision making that we've seen, kind of the evolution from Sean getting more and more aggressive and understanding that Josh Allen's the best player on your team. The more that you can just put the ball in his hands and ride or die with him, let's make that our calling card.
Right. It's really interesting, Eric. I mean, this has been a big cause for me for many years, the fourth down stuff. People talk about it like it's a gamble. Like, that's sort of a word that comes out. Oh, is he going to risk it? But that's not a gamble. That's a gamble if you're the casino, where, like, there is a bet being made, but you're the favorite. Like, making it on 4th-and-2 is, likelier. It's the better win probability, all of that. So it's not a gamble, and it's aggressive, but it's also really, like, just trusting it. It's still 2 yards. The play doesn't care what down it is. The play doesn't care what down it is. The defense is the defense. You're the offense. It's about getting 2 yards. And with this guy, I mean, this has been true for his entire career. There's just no safer bet in the National Football League than Josh Allen in space. So there's always what is the math based on? The math is based on the entirety of National Football League history. Like, here's what happens when you're leading by 2 and it's 2 yards to go. There's 8 minutes, whatever. But teams are different, players are different, and that's part of, I think McDermott gets too much grief for fourth down, because he doesn't go for it all the time. And why people want him to go for it all the time is because of Allen.
Right. And, yeah, and on the season, they were 11 for 12 heading into yesterday on fourth down. That was the best percentage in the NFL, and I believe they went 1 for 2 yesterday.
Right. That's right.
If I'm correct.
Yep.
So you're 12 of 14 on the season now on fourth down. If Sean rolled the dice even more, does that percentage stay the same? Not likely. You know, he's with experience, eighth-year head coach. He's gained enough experience at this point to have a feel for his team, the situation, and everything else, to where early in the game, you know, it's a 50-ish yard field goal. Okay, we're going to roll the dice. Okay, Josh Allen throws an interception. On fourth and two, there's a miscommunication with him and Dawson Knox. Well, he doesn't let that then affect him for the fourth and two later in the game and not go for it, which I respected.
Right, and the first fourth down in the game was an interception, which, you know, so what? Like, you're trying to make it, you're going to be a little bit more, again, aggressive on a decision like that if you're the quarterback.
What do you, right. Eric, do you know, was it revealed after? I know Allen talked a little after the game about that play specifically, but I was distracted. We were, you know, doing our thing here, hosting post game, and I didn't hear all of his explanation on that call. But do you know what they maybe wanted to do design wise, and did Allen just create that, like, all right, I got a lane here? Chris Jones took a, for the Bills, a very fortunate route, and Torrance, they will just manhandle him right out of the play and open up this huge opening for Allen to run through. I wonder if Jones sort of stays put and disciplined in his rush lane, if that is just a quick hitting pass, or what are we looking at on fourth and two there?
Yeah, so fourth and two, Josh said after the game he thought it was going to be, and the Bills thought it was going to be man-to-man defense. They had a man-beater concept on with the crossing route, similar to the play that they scored on to Samuel. So that was the play design. You still have the outlet on a swing out to the right, I believe. Mm-hmm. And so, or maybe it was out to the left with Ty Johnson. So you had options to get it to the guys, but to go then pick up the first down. But those crossing routes are not going to be great. It's not a great call against zone. It can work. Guys are now going to have to sit in the zones as opposed to keep running. That takes them, you know, coordination and timing and all that. Josh said as soon as he saw his own defense, he said, I'm just gonna take it myself and go get it. And I mean, he's 6'5", 240 pounds, runs like a deer. Go get it yourself, bud. If you don't have the exact look, if the guy's not wide open for an easy pitch and catch, you go take it, and that's what he did.
How about the Bills, Eric, on defense yesterday? Kansas City has had a tough time this year. And for them, it wasn't their worst day offensively, but the Bills get a couple of interceptions. Travis Kelce, 2 for 8. The golf clap at the end, which has been, like, debated. For me, that was like, all right, good job, Bills. But yeah. I wasn't in his head. You know him. I don't know. Just what do you think of their performance on that side of the ball?
What the most encouraging thing to me was, for the first time that I can remember, consistent pressure with a four-man rush on Patrick Mahomes. And whether that was a four-man rush with our 4D linemen or in our dime package where Dorian Williams stayed on the field this week with Terrell Bernard and they took off one of the defensive tackles, they were able to apply consistent pressure to Patrick Mahomes. Give him credit. He made some really nice plays, even with guys barreling down on him. We were only able to sack him twice. But the second play of the game, that's an interception. He's getting hit by Daquan Jones. He's getting hit late in the game on the Terrell Bernard interception. And so he was affected throughout that game. That's encouraging to me. Now, Kansas City's tackles are not very good, and the Bills are able to expose them. They were also able to get some pressure on the interior of that Chiefs offensive line, which I think is likely the best in football. And so defensively, I thought they did a good job. And they've stuck to the kind of their game plan this whole year. Okay, Kareem Hunt. And at times it got a little excessive where they were giving up, you know, 6-7 a pop on first down. But if you want to keep the ball on the ground with Kareem Hunt, we do not feel like you can score enough points to beat us today. And so we're not going to oversell out there to give up the monster plays down the field. And you hold them to 21 points, and Patrick Mahomes made a few good plays to extend drives and get the ball in the end zone. That pass he made with Taron Johnson barreling down on him, throwing back across his field right along the Chiefs sideline. I mean, that's a play that only him or Josh Allen can make. And, you know, Mahomes proved he can still do it. But to me, this Kansas City offense, and I know that they haven't had Tyreek Hill in years, and they haven't had quite the same juice at the receiver position. So they bring in Hollywood Brown, and he's out for the year, and you're out Rashee Rice. they just don't seem like they have a lot of juice on the outside to me. And I know Worthy's got some serious speed, but he's not a guy that scares me down in and down out. And even Pacheco being out as well, he's a guy that can break off some bigger chunks. But, you know, Kelce doesn't seem like he's got the elusiveness after the catch that he used to have. It's almost like they have to manufacture everything to where they're not getting a lot of extra yards from their guys like they used to in the explosive fashion. Yes, they'll take a screen for 9-10 yards, but, man, I feel like a few years ago when they had a number of guys with some serious juice out there, or even Travis Kelce a couple years ago, those guys, that offense struck a lot more fear in me at that time.
I wonder quickly if Pacheco can make a big difference there. Like, they should get him back maybe this week. And I know the running back thing is always debated, but Hunt is just shot. I mean, that's not happening. So I bet they're, Bulldog, I bet they're ready for him to return.
There's room there. I mean, Hunt still, he's not going to beat you, but he was like 5 yards on first down regularly, which tells me if you got a more athletic guy there like Pacheco, maybe there's more meat there that he can generate.
And then you might play them differently, opens up other things.
More opportunities. I wanted to ask you, Eric, if you were able to discern on Kelce, either from watching the game or anything that was said or that you read after the game, did the Bills change their approach at all to Kelce? Because he has murdered them in the past. And, I mean, Mike just said it, 2 for 8. I mean, it was an afterthought.
I didn't notice anything in particular other than, you know, the targets were just – there just wasn't that many targets. I know the interception at the end by Terrell Bernard, that was going to go to Kelce, but I'm not sure. And I'm not sure if some of it was the pressure that Patrick Mahomes was under. And a lot of what they do is off script. Travis finds an open zone. Well, that doesn't always happen super fast. And so I'm not sure if it was the pressure on him or if it's having Terrell Bernard, you know, healthy for this matchup or what exactly schematically, but they did a nice job on him. And I said, you know, it doesn't seem like he's got the same juice. Well, he had 2 touchdowns a week ago.
Yeah.
He's been extreme. I mean, he's been the number one fantasy tight end over, I believe, the last 3 weeks. I know, Shope, you would know that better than me. But he after having a slow start to this year, he has picked it up, and his production has been there. He leads their team in catches coming into yesterday by 36 catches. And I know some of that's because he's at the receiver position. But that's a staggering margin, and then you hold that guy to 2 catches for 8 yards. That's a big deal.
Last thing for me, Ryan Vandermark. First career start, stepping in for Spencer Brown, and it felt pretty clean.
It did feel clean. I didn't notice him a whole lot out there, which is a great thing with an offensive lineman. And I didn't feel like they were using their tight ends to chip too much or, you know, make sure they slide the line his way. Karloftis is not an easy matchup. I know he was going against him a bunch yesterday. So credit to him. Credit to, you know, Cromer and their staff for being able to develop these guys to where you can plug in a guy like Ryan Vandermark at right tackle and really not miss a beat. It's been, and that's not a shot at Spencer Brown. I think Spencer Brown has had an awesome season at right tackle.
By the way, tight ends, Brock Bowers, 16 targets, 13 catches, 124, and a touchdown for the Raiders. And that's one of those where, like, who's the quarterback? Why would you ever bet on that? But that guy is going to break the Ditka record, I think.
And Taysom Hill, who's listening, tight end, had 7 rushes, 3 touchdowns yesterday, and 130-some yards rushing. So that, to me, is a little cheap.
But you and I got to jump on a fantasy podcast together. That's exactly right. In a lot of these leagues I play in, he's a quarterback. And it was so good that he played – he was like the number one quarterback. If you count him as – he had 42 fantasy points yesterday, Taysom Hill. So what – if you will tell us, Eric, what are your bye week plans?
Bye week plans? We're actually going to go to Florida this weekend. The kids are going to be off early next week for Thanksgiving break. So we're going to go down to Florida and have a little R&R down there. I heard that you guys are going to have Sean McDermott on. I don't know how exactly you all can mess with him, but I would like for you guys to mess with him, and you can say it's on my behalf, but something along the lines of, hey, if the messaging after the game is humble and hungry and this isn't our Super Bowl, then Sean better do what he did to us in 2017 and give him the bare minimum 4 days off and not let him travel too much.
All right, noted.
You guys got 4 days off?
We only had four days off. Okay. That's the minimum, okay. Right.
The new CBA says that you have to get a minimum 4 days off consecutively. Well, Sean generally gives them 6 to 7 now, or 6 days off, and that's kind of standard around the league. And in Sean's first year, he was like, absolutely not. We're doing the minimum 4 days, and you guys get your butts back here. So
okay.
Just tell him just be like, hey, you know, we had Eric on earlier, and he was mentioning that, you know, if you want to keep the messaging humble and hungry, then you might want to stick to what you guys did in 2017 and only give him 4 days off.
I think we have to do this, and I think we can't mention Eric until after he answers.
Okay.
Right? We put this to him, and then we'll see what he says, and then after that, like, Eric actually told us to ask you this. So we'll figure it out.
Okay. Thank
you, Eric. Enjoy your break, and we will talk to you in 2 weeks.
Okay, sounds good, guys. Enjoy your time as well.
Thank you.
There you go. That's Eric Wood on the Wester Hotline, and his appearances on these Mondays are always brought to you by Northwest Bank. For what's next, get started at northwest.com, and by Northtown Kia, Western New York's number one Kia dealer. Shop at northtownkia.com.
We can't run a game on McDermott. They're 9-2. Come on, they just beat Kansas. Can't we run a game? We'll talk about it. Head coach of the Bills, Sean McDermott, due on with us sometime between 4:45 and 5, I guess. Times are approximate. 803-0550 for your calls. Football Monday. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog, WGR.
This is the best version of Buffalo. They were missing a great tight end. You know, they're missing an offensive lineman. They're missing a star wide receiver, and they still move the ball. They dominate third down. They dominate time of possession. They control the football game. And so I think this is the absolute best version of Buffalo.
Colin Coward, agree?
I don't think I do.
They're good.
I think maybe I agree. I just feel like they're more, the very beginning of the show today, like, what are they good at? I think they're good at everything. They're not great, maybe, at anything.
Yep.
They're great at quarterback. And so they've got that. They've got, I mean, the biggest, baddest-ass jar of whiteout you've ever seen to fix up, you know, mistakes when they happen. But I think they're good at everything. And I don't know, have they been good at everything before? Maybe, I don't know. I mean, it's just, you know, the best. Everything that's happening now is always the best thing that's ever happened anyway. But I don't know, it might be their most well-rounded team, and that fits a criteria, I think, the way Coward's talking there. It's the best version of themselves. I don't think the weaknesses are as weak, maybe, as they have been before.
Well, that's right. It's a floor team with maybe not quite the same ceiling, right? Like, a team that's floor is so high that their bad days are really not bad at all. Like, they're good enough.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe Indianapolis or the Jets were two teams they played where it really wasn't that impressive, but they won. And, like, their floor is pretty high. In the playoffs, I'm going to need ceiling. And I don't know if Kansas City is sort of potent enough to be that threat. Imagine that being true. But whether it's Baltimore or someone else, they have 4 losses now, by the way. Yeah, like, it's different. I think the first couple hot Allen Bills years, they were just more dangerous. And I like that. I like that for the playoffs. Mm-hmm. You know, the 13 seconds tragedy notwithstanding, that team, that was it. Like, that team had that sort of dangerousness.
Yeah.
And I don't know if this team does. I don't think it does. But they don't turn the ball over, and they take it away. And that will get you far in football as long as it lasts.
Yep. I'm starting to feel the vibes. I mean, you know who hasn't been dangerous or potent on offense the last 2 years? The team that won the Super Bowl. The Chiefs have done it without any of that.
That's right.
And so I'm at, and furthermore, 2 years ago and again last year, but it was more the case 2 years ago because that's the first year after the Hill trade. It's like, I thought this was kind of a tread water, step back kind of year, and that's what we felt like this year was going to be for the Bills, with all the veterans going out the door, all the dead money. It's, you know, like I said earlier in the show, I thought they'd still be good. I thought they'd still win the division because I never really bought into the Jets, and I thought they could fend off Miami. I did not have 9-2 on my bingo card, and maybe they're maybe they are the best version of themselves in a year where we didn't exactly see that coming.
Here's Gerald next. Hi, Gerald.
Hi, guys. How you guys doing?
Fantastic. Thank you.
So last night was the first game that I've been to since September of 1986.
Wow.
So nice. I was hoping that it was going to be, you know, pretty much exactly what it was. I didn't want anybody to win 45-14. I hate those football games. But I have to say that in the first quarter, I was so annoyed that Buffalo kept running on first down, knowing that they weren't going to get more than 3 inches. And then by the second quarter, it dawned on me that they were playing the time of possession game and trying to keep Mahomes on the sideline and wear out their defense, which clearly happened in the fourth quarter. They were doing a lot of play action that was helping things. But what really caught me was I didn't realize how much time those teams had during timeouts, or I'm sorry, during TV commercials.
Yeah.
They could put together a 2-3-play package in a 3-minute TV commercial. Like, come on, guys, put something together and let's do something here. I don't know why that jumped out at me, but it does.
Well, if you haven't been to a game in a long time, that's a reason. I mean, it's sort of jarring when you're home. Those commercial breaks are, you know, what? Go to the fridge, go to the John, let the dog out. I mean, whatever, right? And it sort of lets you get your breath. When you're at the game, I know I felt this when we went for many years in a row, every home game, and like the guy, you know, with the orange gloves walks on the field for the TV timeout. It's like, yeah,
it's going to be a minute.
It's going to be a little while. It's just like, you know, it's not the same when you're there and you're experiencing the timeout. It seems more like a stoppage than when you're at home. When you're at home, it's a break. And there's, I don't know, a subtle difference in that language, but a stoppage is more of an affront than a break is, I think. A break is like, oh, I needed a break. Stoppage? Who needs a stoppage?
Yeah, if you want to get up at the stadium, then what do you do?
Right.
Where do you go?
You're gone for 20 minutes.
You're gone for 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Getting connected with the fans brought to you by Northtown Kia, Western New York's number one Kia dealer. Shop online at northtownkia.com. We should have Bills head coach Sean McDermott to join us here in a few minutes. We'll see when. It'll be soon, though. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog here, WGR. Bulldog, you were right.
What's that now?
You were right. This business of thinking I can find what I need in this notebook by starting to write on the backs of pages.
Horrible idea.
Is not helping me.
No.
I'm looking for that stat about their record. 70, would it be 57-20? Last 77 regular season games, that sound right?
You're really looking for
I can't
me.
Find it.
You're looking for me to have that committed to memory week over week here.
I'm asking you what page it's on.
I had you last week. I don't know now. Okay. 57-20 sounds right. I think it was 55-20 the first time you brought it up, and I think there have been two games since.
Okay. Joining us now on the Western Hotline is Bills head coach Sean McDermott. Hi, Sean.
On the heels of that.
How we doing, guys?
Good. You don't know where this is in my notebook, do you? I don't think you would know that. Great win yesterday. How did you feel about this game through the week, like even into yesterday morning? Were you pretty confident?
Oh, yeah. Very confident in our football team. Very confident. You know, I knew it was going to be a great environment. I knew, you know, it was going to come down. We felt like it was going to come down like it always has to the fourth quarter, some part of the fourth quarter. And our team played extremely well when the game was on the line.
The game being on the line with 4th-and-2 at the 26-yard line, maybe as definitive a moment where the game is on the line. I mean, you had a lead at least, but take me through the thought process there, Sean, because there's obviously an opportunity for a field goal that leaves you not getting beat by a field goal in turn, but leaves you susceptible to a touchdown. And I think a lot of fans were really impressed that you decided to keep the offense on the field and go for it there, and obviously you got paid off.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. I think we've been, you know, in my history here, rather aggressive overall, and just felt like, you know, with the data that we had, you know, during the week and had mapped it out, if we were in a situation like that, that we would want to go for it and stay on the gas right there. And it turned out that's a situation that came up for us, and it worked out. Josh made a great play, and heck, we were just looking for the first down, and he takes it to the house, and place goes crazy. I mean, what a great environment last night. The fans are incredible. I had a guy today tell me he was 3 miles away, tailgating 3 miles away outside, and could hear the fans from where he was. So just an incredible environment.
That's awesome. As that play is unfolding, are you like a basketball coach who's about to watch a guy launch a three-pointer that you didn't want him to shoot? Or like, what is your reaction to, like, because that play ended up, I don't know what the design was supposed to be, but it ended up just being one of these plays where Allen just goes, okay, I got it. I know a lot of coaches, I'm not saying this, I don't know you well enough, even after all these years, to know this about you definitively, but you like to control things, right? You like things to go as scripted as you practice them. Is that play just organized chaos once the ball is snapped?
Well, you know, we're thinking there potentially in man-to-man coverage there, which is, you know, it's fourth and two. You're expecting tight coverage. They pass some things off and potentially what was a zone defense. Josh took it, you know, under his own power to go to flee the pocket and go. And the thing I love about it is he was decisive. He knew what they were giving us coverage-wise, and he took off with it. And then the rest of it after he, you know, made it past the line there was – really his own willpower and his own desire and competitive nature. I mean, it was, you know, unreal to watch, almost like slow motion as I was watching it once he got past the first down marker. Just incredible effort.
Sean, you know, this I think you might know from our years when we've spoken, like fourth down is a, certainly for me, like a big cause almost. Like I love the fourth down stuff. I can't catch or throw or tackle, but I love the strategy. And I think you're right when you say like you've been on sort of the plus side of that, you know, in terms of over the years, how often you've gone for it. I just don't feel like I know hardly anything about your process when it comes to that, if you allow me to use that word. Can you tell us anything that goes into how that decision gets made, you know, the communication, you and upstairs, that we don't know? Because I think maybe teams are pretty guarded when it comes to this, like just how it gets decided, what goes into it. But maybe there's something you would share that would be new to us.
Yeah, sure. I've got nothing to hide here, Shobha. I'll tell you how we do it during the week and kind of the short version, and then I'll tell you during the game. And during the week, you know, we match up the matchup overall, you know, one team versus the other, and, you know, is the offense that we're going to face in a big, you know, high-scoring offense, which could make it a possession game as opposed to a field position game, where you're looking at, hey, we're going to have to outscore this team and so on and so forth. And so I think that's our first step in the week of our process. And then we'll have multiple meetings, myself, our coordinators, and some of the staff that we have in the press box, my analytics guy as well, Dennis Locke and Mark Lubick, who helps manage our game from the coaching staff standpoint, John Perry, the retired referee that we added this season as well. So we'll have kind of a couple different powwows during the week, and some of those meetings get, you know, skinny down to just a few of us, and then ultimately we get into the game and we'll talk about the first drive and how we want that first drive to look. And sometimes fourth downs come up in that first drive. Sometimes they don't, and then you read the game from there based on, hey, is the game, you know, turning out to be a field position game or a possession game? Last night, you know, kind of a little bit different for Bills Chiefs games was at some point becoming a little bit of a field position game. We went for the fourth down earlier in the game, and at that point, still the game hadn't really declared. We felt like it was a possession game at that point. But, it, you know, somewhere in the fourth quarter, I think we were 16-14 at some point there. And at that point, you know, it was declaring a little bit more as a field position game. So just trying to stay on top of the pulse. And when that situation was coming up, Dennis Locke, our assistant up top in the booth, and myself were talking and saying, hey, this is what we talked about during the week, and being aggressive. And, you know, there's just enough data with good teams, with good quarterbacks, good coaches like Andy and Patrick Mahomes that you're saying, hey, want to stay on the gas, don't want to give him another shot here. And the downside of it is the risk taking is the risk that you take of saying, hey, you could turn around, they get X amount of yards and a field goal beat you, right, to walk off the game. So That's the inherent risk, and that's the risk I had to take.
Really good. Thank you. I really appreciate your going in on that. You also got a timeout before the play last night, before the Allen touchdown, which maybe that was sort of a blessing. The Chiefs need to stop the clock. You had 2.5 minutes there to get a little bit more time to hash that out.
Well, yes, and probably more so for Joe Brady, our offensive coordinator, because we were going to go for it either way. We were going to go for it. I think we had a third and two. We didn't get anything there. May have even gone for it on a fourth and three situation. So we were on green, I'll call it, the whole way. And you know, look, there's also a different type of mindset you got to have if you want to be great, right? You got to, in order to win games. And you know, whether it's, you know, trotting T-Bass out there for a 60-some-yard field goal or this situation, it's you know, every situation is a little bit different, but you got to think that way before you actually get there, right? So just fired up that we were able to execute, thankful for it, and certainly led to the win.
You've had your share of Travis Kelce having very good to great days against you. Yesterday, very modest. Was there any, recognizing, you know, you're not going to give us the sauce recipe on the air here, but did you change anything tactically to try to take him away? We just talked to Eric Wood last hour, and he just mentioned the pass rush maybe affecting Mahomes more, and maybe that had the biggest impact more so than anything you were doing in the middle of the field.
Right, I think, Bulldog, the awareness piece, I thought the coaches did a great job on the defensive side with just building awareness as to where Kelce was in the formation. You know, to some extent, sometimes you get on the goal line and they get into these kind of, you know, muddled up formations and they hide their best tight end. Well, you're always wanting to identify where the pass-catching tight end is. And in this case, that was in the middle of the field for us with Kelce and making sure every formation – our guys knew where he was, and were able to try and get some hands on him as well to friction some of his releases and whatnot. So, and then, like you mentioned, and Eric probably mentioned, like you said, the pass rush helped out, right? When that rush and coverage can work together, it certainly, you know, allows the ball or helps the ball come out a little quicker than sometimes they want it to.
Eric wanted us to ask you about how many days off you give the players, because I think he's still a little bitter that you guys only got four. He only got four when he played for you.
That bye week was in week six, by the way, I looked, and so it's much later. I don't know like what your plans are here, but yeah, he was prepared to be upset if you give them more than 4 days off, I think.
You can tell them I'm giving them just about, after today, they're going to have the rest of the week off, which is, other than maybe when Eric was here that first year or two, which is how we've done it since, and it's worked for us, you know. But we'll be practicing hard when they come back, and would love to see you guys come down and join us, come down and visit. I know I offered you guys the invitation, I think, back in training camp.
You did.
But it remains open if you'd like.
What should we expect to be able to see?
Well, hopefully we're practicing like a pro football team.
Well, okay. I don't. Sal gets like 10 minutes or something. I don't know.
No, it's you get a few minutes, but no, you guys are always welcome to come down and visit and see how we do things.
I enjoyed seeing you on Saturday, by the way.
I did too. That was a pleasant surprise. Canisius against Tymon in a great football game on a Saturday afternoon. Pretty cool environment down there. I was enjoying myself.
Do you get to many high school games? I think that would probably be a pretty cool thing for an NFL head coach, but you might not have, you know, as much time as you'd want.
No, I absolutely love going to high school football, Shope. I really do. It's whether it's Orchard Park, I've had a chance to watch some of their games, or you name it. Obviously, the Canisius game this past weekend, and there's nothing to me better than going to a raw high school football game where it's true football, and these kids are, you know, they work so hard to get out there and play, and you're watching them give their all, and it's just, what a great environment.
Does it maybe take you back to when you played?
Of course. I think it does for all of us, right? When you're out there, whether it's football, all the different sports, and you're just seeing the students out there cheering for their buddies and parents out there cheering for their sons in this case. And then as it relates to Tymon and Canisius, you know, just the amount of, to me, community and around the game and sense of school pride that I saw Saturday afternoon there.
Nice to hear. Very good. Thank you, Sean. Any questions for us?
All good. All good. Come see us sometime, and we'll talk to you guys soon. Thanks for having me on.
Have a good break.
Sure thing. Thanks, Coach.
All right. Take care, guys.
Sean McDermott on the Wester Hotline. Canisius Joe's Saturday.
Oh, boy.
St. Joe's beat St. Francis in overtime. So
that's a biggie.
Might have to go to that one, too. Yeah. I was just trying to stay warm.
on Saturday.
Yeah, I just... that thing with the one cloud, again, like it's just, if there's 50 sounds good, one cloud and I'm freezing. I did not wear a coat. Why?
You're an idiot.
That's right. That's the answer. Why else would I not have worn
with
a coat?
This notebook, you don't know how to dress yourself. I don't even know what to do with you anymore.
57 and 20 is right since week all one right. of 2020. Good. We will look for your calls again after the update. 803-0550, Bills 31, Chiefs 20, 9-2, now the bye week. Football Monday, Mike Schoep and the Bulldog, WGR.